Let me tell you about something new. A new show called G's Power.
G's Power.
Real talk for real saints.
Are you ready?
And it's for real.
Welcome to G's Power Hour live every weekday at 11:30 a.m. on Never Had It So Good Entertainment Network. Your host, G, will bring you informative and entertaining guests and a variety of topics in a way that you can absorb and enjoy. Listen in weekdays and call in at 516-387-1944. We love interaction. All shows can be downloaded if you miss one or found on iTunes the next day. G's Power Hour is powered by Never Had It So Good Sports Media Network.
G's Power Hour.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry.
Well, good morning, brothers and sisters, kings and queens, angels and saints, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. I am your host, G. Thanks so much for being with us today, the second Wednesday of the month, which I like to deem Wellness Wednesday because it's all about being well, and especially right now, got to try to stay well with everything that's going on. So, you know that we've had this lady on before, and I wanted to bring her back, and I want to talk about something that women, most women, know a whole lot about, and men kind of shy away from. I know it might make them a little squeamish, but if you're a good man, you're going to listen because you need to know what's going on with your woman, and that is talking about a woman's cycle and everything. And some other things that go on with women as they age. And so we have Dr. Sarah St. Louis with us this morning. Good morning. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Thank you so much for having me on the show.
Well, thank you for coming back. You weren't scared away. That's a good thing. So I'm going to share my own experience a little bit with this because I just would never wish this on my worst enemy. When I was starting, I guess, into the phase of becoming a woman and everything, it was not pretty. I had cramps on a regular basis. Well, I guess you could say on a regular basis. I was irregular, and I had cramps, and I got sick. The first 24 hours were a living hell pretty much for me because I was – and my mom, she would kind of try to watch and time, and she was like, are you okay today before I go to school? I'm like, yeah, fine. And I felt fine. I mean, nothing was going on because it was irregular. So she's like, if you think you're going to be sick today, do not go to school. I'm like, I'm fine. Until about 10 o'clock during the day, and then it came on just like, war, cramps, nausea, vomiting, all that kind of stuff. And that happened for the first 24 hours. And then the next 24 to 48 hours, if I wasn't still sick, I was in recovery because I had thrown up so much that my sides hurt and I just was weak. So this may not be everybody's story, but I want to talk a little bit about what menstrual cramps are, what causes some to be more severe than others. So can you talk a little bit about that, please?
Absolutely, which is an interesting question and a little bit of a difficult one to answer, but menstrual cramps are actually just the uterus contracting down because as we menstruate, we know that it's when the lining of the uterus is shedding, which typically happens in a monthly fashion. And to assist with pushing the shedding or the blood out of the uterus through the cervix, which is closed, the uterus will give these contractions to help push the blood out. It's different for every woman. This is very, in the same sense, similar to labor. Labor pains are experienced differently by different women. And it all just has to do with each person's individual body and their pain receptors and their response to pain. Uterine contractions can obviously be very forceful and very painful. And then there are other people that have periods that don't have any cramping whatsoever. So that's basically what the cramping is. And the other part of your question, what was remind me the other part?
No, I just wanted to know, what menstrual cramps are, what causes it, and you kind of explained that. I kind of would like to know, though, what triggers the other part in terms of the nausea or sickness, anything else that might go along with that. What is that about?
It's the body's response to the flood of hormones and the fluctuation and change in hormones. So, and again, for every person, it's different. And we typically see people having very severe responses to these hormonal changes at the two extremes of age and of the reproductive cycle. So women can have these, what we call like visceral responses, nausea, diarrhea, dizziness, lightheaded, fainting, cramping. We tend to have more symptoms when our hormones are more at an imbalanced part of our life, which is the first few years after you start to menstruate. And then again, once we approach menopause, you'll hear women talk about their periods got really bad again those last few years. So the other responses are simply the way your gastrointestinal tract is responding to the hormonal fluctuations, which could be nausea, upset stomach, diarrhea, things of that nature, like you described, like a war is going on.
Yeah, and I was on the losing end of that one on a regular basis, like for a while.
Yeah.
Now, does it matter in terms of when a woman's cycle starts? Does that have anything to do with it? Are there other health factors, contributing factors, weight, other like issues, that may be going on medically with a person that might cause them to have more of an issue than someone else?
Absolutely. So a lot of it has to do with our exposure to estrogens, for instance. And one of the things that we know and is very well studied is that higher increased body mass index or obesity, it can contribute to more severe menstrual symptoms. It can contribute to heavier bleeding. It can contribute to irregular periods. It can contribute to painful periods. And we also know that our diet, in particular, the American diet, has changed over the past several decades. So we have seen changes in women and adolescents and when they're getting their period and how their periods are affecting them based on the changes we've seen in the diet that we consume here. So I agree, and there could also be medical conditions going on at the same time. So there could be syndromes where there are even more hormonal or endocrine imbalances like polycystic ovarian syndrome, or there could be things such as problems with the thyroid gland that can affect a woman's menstrual cycle.
It's
and we also can't forget about fibroids. That's infamous.
Yeah, I mean, I know fibroids is a very big deal. It's interesting, though, that you talk about the thyroid because I did not, let's say, knowingly have a problem with my thyroid when I was younger, but I could have had one. I know my first cousin had her thyroid removed around 11 or 12, and for me, obesity was far from the issue. I was like totally opposite. You know, people would ask, does she eat? And I'm like, quite a bit, yes. I eat. But I was very, very skinny, unlike now. But so the obesity wasn't a thing for me. But as you mentioned, the thyroid, I mean, it's only been within the past several years that I've been diagnosed with hyperthyroidism. And I have often wondered that if I had an issue before these last several years and maybe some other things are masking it and it was never diagnosed earlier. So it's interesting you say that.
Yeah.
Now one of the things as I got older and I was getting ready for college, and we kind of resisted it at first, but one of the things my mom and I had been approached about and said no at first and then decided as I was getting ready to go to college was to go on birth control pills so that I would not be out of class and out of work all these, you know, days during the month while I was having these issues. And it seemed to be an automatic cure, so to speak. And I know birth control kind of comes with its own set of issues. But I was curious in terms of, is it about the birth control pills that seem to kind of, you know, put all of this right, in a sense?
Right, correct, because it always is kind of the number one go-to for reproductive age women that have painful periods, heavy periods, or extreme symptoms from their periods, that is, as well as an NSAID such as ibuprofen. The reason is because the birth control pills control a couple different things. Number one, we were discussing the reason why the periods are so out of order and hard to predict and painful and heavy is because a lot of times it's due to a hormonal imbalance. And in particular, this happens in the early stages of our reproductive years where the periods are just hard to manage and hard to deal with. So there's a hormonal imbalance and the birth control pill balances the hormones. So that's why it works and it's proven and it's effective time and time again. So while you as an individual may have hormone levels that are fluctuating in such drastic ways every month, and it's happening throughout the entire course of the month, the birth control pill keeps them steady and keeps them at a certain level. And then when you stop for the 7 days, everything drops and you shed and you have that predicted bleeding, and it decreases all of the pain associated with it because eventually it actually will thin the lining of the uterus, so that it's not as thick as before. Therefore, there's a lot of decreased cramping and pain. So it's all about hormonal balance, and that's what the birth control pill does.
Okay. So why is it for certain people, certain medications work for pain and others don't? Because, of course, when I was coming up, Midol was kind of the big thing, but it never worked.
Mm-hmm.
Aspirin mm-hmm. didn't work. It was only until, for me, outside of the birth control, when I tried to get away from birth control and tried to do something else, the only thing that seemed to work was Aleve, which had, or the naproxen, I forget what the whole name is,
mm-hmm.
that is the, I guess, the chemical version of that, the official version of that. That only seemed to work. But I was just curious in terms of why certain pain relievers have a capacity to work for certain people versus others. You know, ibuprofen works for some people. Tylenol works for some people, I guess, with the acetaminophen. So can you talk mm-hmm. about that?
Absolutely. And that is very common. And like for me, ibuprofen will just never work for me. It doesn't touch on anything. You know, if I had a headache, it's not going to work. I am a Tylenol person. That's what works for me. The reason it's different for everyone is because everybody has different amounts of receptors for medication and the way that these different types of medications act differently on our pain receptors. So different medications either block the stimulus of pain or stop the receptor from picking up that stimulus. They work in different ways. Some decrease inflammation, which is the cause of our pain. So each medication works differently. And you might find that one works better than the other because it's actually targeting the reason for your pain, whereas the other type of medication is not, so it has no effect. So that is why medications work differently. And also, as I said, everyone has different pain receptors, and everyone's pain receptors, they don't fire at the same rate. So some people, as you've heard people mention, I have a very high threshold for pain. I have a very low threshold for pain. It's different
mm-hmm.
for every person. There's also, for instance, we're still actually a bit baffled by the cervix, which is the opening to the uterus, which is what has to dilate to have a baby. certain women have, we're baffled by the nerve endings there and the pain receptors, because there are some women where their cervix is not a source of pain for them, and in others it's extremely painful to have a procedure done or a biopsy done or any type of dilation. So it is a very interesting concept. Everyone's body is different, and that's why the medications work differently on each person.
Yeah, because you talk about the cervix, and I know one of the speculations was maybe the, I guess, opening of the cervix was not was not large enough to allow that flow that you were talking about.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of speculation.
Absolutely.
The other thing is going back to trying to maybe get away from the chemical stuff and trying to do something natural. At one point in time, I had read and was trying a combination of calcium and magnesium, because my understanding was a combination of calcium and magnesium can help to fight pain. I don't know if that's true or not, and I didn't know if you could expand on that.
So absolutely, there's definitely science behind that. Both magnesium and calcium play a large role in muscle cramps. So if you're deficient in these vitamins and supplements and electrolytes, if there's imbalances there, you could experience more cramps in your muscles. Magnesium also can help relax the muscle, so it's not cramping as much, and calcium is a supportive electrolyte for the role in muscular contraction and relaxation. So absolutely they can help. Now, it may not help everybody, but there's no harm in using that.
Right. 'Cause, I mean, even now for me, I take magnesium because I do notice, for me, I get sometimes muscle spasms. And every now and then, it seems to me that the magnesium, the introduction of magnesium helps to kind of curb some of that, like if I turn a certain way or whatever. So.
Absolutely.
Well, this is good to know. I wish I had known it, several years ago. but good to know, because especially, we're starting back school, and those young women that are trying to focus on school and stuff don't need the distraction of all the other stuff that's going on, the pain and the changes and stuff like that. And if there's a way to manage it, we definitely want to talk about that. But we're going to take a quick break. We are here with Dr. Sarah St. Louis. This is G's Power Hour. I never had it so good. This Wellness Wednesday. If you have questions, the number is 516-387-1944, and we will be right back.
Over the past 60 years, Dove Beauty Bar's superior formula has remained unchanged. But when it comes to beauty, everything changed. Together, we redefined beauty. We said no to stereotypes and yes to every type. We let go of judgments and embraced what makes us unique. We're proud to have been there with you, caring for you every step of the way. Here's to the next 60 years.
Hi, I'm Tim Gehrens. You may know me as Timmy G. Yeah, I know. It's been 2 decades, but I want you to know I'm back in the arc with you. And I've got a mix of music that can help you relax and chill out. It's smooth, it's relaxing, it's chill out jazz. The soulful mix of smooth jazz, soul, and smooth R&B. So join me every Wednesday night, 10 p.m. to midnight, on K-Ham Radio.
Are you chillin'?
Good morning. Welcome back to G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment this Wellness Wednesday. I am your host, G. Thanks so much for being with us. And today we have Dr. Sarah St. Louis on with us to kind of help us get some things figured out. I wish I'd have had her several decades ago. I'll just say that. But I thank you for taking the time today, because it's important that we know what's going on with our bodies. It's important that we know how to manage it and to ask the right questions, because I know some of us are a little skeptical about, trying to ask questions. So glad you're here this morning. So I want to talk a little bit about something else that's related to the menstrual cycle and cramps and the hormones and everything, and that's endometriosis. And for a while, I kind of speculated that this might have been some of what was going on with me, but every time I went to the doctor, they're like, no, you're fine, you don't have it, you don't have it. Can you talk about what endometriosis is, and there might be an issue with this, because this can get very serious if it's not diagnosed in a timely fashion. Hello? Dr. Sarah. Oh, no. Did we lose her?
She's back
okay.
now.
Oh, she's back.
Hi.
Okay.
Sorry, the call dropped.
That's okay.
I hope it doesn't drop again.
That's okay. We'll take the bonus and keep you on. So, what I was asking is about endometriosis and what is it? Tell whether or not you might have it outside of a regular exam. And we know that if it's not caught in a timely fashion, it could be very serious. So, can you talk to everybody about what endometriosis is?
Absolutely. So endometriosis is basically, as we discussed a little bit earlier, in order for us to have our period, there are glands within the lining of the uterus that have to shed every month. And in endometriosis, the glands that are typically found just within the lining of the uterus somehow have been explanted in are in other areas of the abdominal cavity. So we're finding evidence of those glands on your ovary, perhaps, on your fallopian tube, maybe beneath the bladder, maybe by the rectum, and maybe just various implants within the abdomen, the deep abdominal cavity. And so that means every month when you're having your cycle and we're getting those cramps, they can be far worse because you have more glands that are dispersed in other places that are also responding to those hormonal changes. So it can produce very heavy and very painful periods. It can produce things called endometriomas, which are cysts in the ovary that can build up with old blood. And they can eventually become very painful unless they're surgically removed. So that's a brief explanation as to what endometriosis is. And it's quite common. And as you were saying, a lot of times we can't diagnose it on physical exam. There are rare instances where you can, but 9 times out of 10, it's actually diagnosed clinically just by listening to someone's history of their menstrual pattern and the severity of their menses and the pain that they experience and how cyclical in nature it is. But obviously the number one way to diagnose it is actually by surgery and taking one of those areas, sending it to the lab where they look at it under a microscope and confirm that, yes, this is endometriosis. So a lot of times, like you said, it's not just diagnosed on exam. And most of the time, a clinician should just take your history and make an assumption, and it might take several months to make that assumption, that, yes, you probably do have endometriosis. And yes, we should begin treatment for it. And the treatment for endometriosis begins with the same things that we discussed earlier, which is some type of anti-inflammatory pain medication and usually a birth control pill to moderate those hormone levels.
So is surgery absolutely necessary, or is it possible that it might go away on its own, depending, I guess, on the severity of it?
So they typically don't go away on their own until we reach menopause, because that's when we have the decreased estrogen level. So, you know, people have, obviously they're not having their period anymore, and then there's no more of that cyclical change in the estrogen levels every month that are promoting further stimulation of these glands that are within the abdominal cavity and affecting other organs. So, but there are ways to treat it and to manage it without surgery. And people are now looking into things a little bit more heavily, such as anti-inflammatory type of diets, which obviously is the diet that is healthiest for all of us, which is full of your vegetables and healthy lean proteins.
So since you brought it up,
mm-hmm.
I want to talk about estrogen for a minute.
Mm-hmm.
Because someone was mentioning to me about, you know, possibility of using estrogen because I think I've been out of menopause long enough, but I still get hot. I still have heat issues. But someone was recommending about estrogen, and I'm like, I don't think I want to try that. But I know it has its, you know, benefits and it has its drawbacks. Can you talk a little bit about what estrogen is and where it's beneficial and where it may be a problem?
So estrogen can be used. It's typically used to treat what we call the vasomotor symptoms of menopause, which is that the hot flashing and flushing that people experience is the most common reason to use it, which can last for several years beyond menopause. Some people, it may only be a year or two. For others, it could be 7 years, 10 years that they're still experiencing symptoms. And then it also can treat things such as when we go through menopause, a lot of times we start to notice that all of a sudden there's this mood instability, as well as what we call this menopause brain fog. For some reason, things just aren't as quick to come to us as they were before. And it really all has to do with the fact that we've lost a lot of estrogen. And so basically adding back that estrogen through hormonal therapy can help with some of those effects that we have. Now, obviously, estrogen can be dangerous and has definitely and clearly been linked to things such as breast cancer, cancer of the uterus. It's also been linked to things such as blood clots, which can be fatal for a person and produce strokes. So there are things that we have to take into consideration when we decide if we're going to do hormonal therapy. And if we are going to do hormonal therapy with estrogen, a lot of times they add back both estrogen and progesterone because the progesterone helps to protect the uterus. And a lot of times we do it at a level that is the lowest dose necessary to help alleviate your symptoms. So that in and of itself is a nutshell about estrogen therapy after menopause.
Okay, so I think a cool Arnold Palmer under the air conditioner I'll just deal with that. Okay.
Yeah, and we know there are some supplements that have been known to help people as well. And one that I recently have been recommending for my patients is one called Relevin, and it's for hot flashes, and it's natural. It doesn't contain any hormones or estrogen. It's actually from a Swedish flower pollen extract, and also helps with sleep support as well. So this is completely herbal, and it's something you can purchase over the counter online.
And what did you call? Never mind. I'm going to ask you to email me this, make sure you spell it right, and I will pull it up, y'all. And get the information and post it on the G's Power Hour Facebook page. But,
I've got you covered. I'll send it your way.
Okay. The thing that you mentioned, and like I mentioned to you before about my late diagnosis with the hyperthyroidism, and I wondered if one symptom could be, they seem to share a lot of symptoms. So I just wanted to know, like the low tolerance for heat, and there were a few other things. I know with the drain of estrogen, I think you can develop like some osteoporosis or osteoarthritis,
mm-hmm.
which seemed to be the same thing with the hyperthyroidism. So I was wondering about the mask, one maybe masking symptoms of another.
That is very interesting, and what you're saying is true. And yes, decreased estrogen can contribute, is what contributes to osteoporosis in women. And that's one of the reasons why when people do have bleeding abnormalities, like heavy periods, irregular periods, they're skipping periods, one of the first things that a gynecologist is going to take into account or should take into account is their thyroid function. Now, a lot of times that's not looked at in our adolescence, but as we age and get into our, you know, 20s, 30s, we start to think about, is there a thyroid issue, underlying thyroid issue? And that's because all of our hormones, most of our hormones from the body come from very few places. And that's why symptoms of hypothyroidism and symptoms can contribute to abnormal bleeding. So in and of itself, yes, you are correct with that. But you can do a blood test, as you know, to test for the thyroid dysfunction.
Right. And it just so happened when I was diagnosed, it was I was telling somebody about this pounding in my head. I could hear my heart pounding in my head, and they had me like tilt my neck back and swallow. And then that's when they were like, you know, I think I suggest you go see an endocrinologist because I think it might be something else. It's very interesting. So I highly encourage, you know, whatever's going on with you, whether it's menopause or you know, menstrual cycle, whatever it is, that at least at some point, you know, ask your doctor to please check your thyroid, because it can creep up on you. I've heard so many different stories about people on TV, personalities on TV, that a viewer had called in and told them, you need to go get your thyroid checked because they saw something, you know, on the television that was abnormal with their neck area. And it turned out that they had something serious going on that they weren't even aware of. So just my little tidbit to throw out there. Yeah. Anyway, we're going to take a quick break. We are blessed to have Dr. Sarah Saint-Louis on with us to talk about our menstrual cycles and endometriosis and some other things on this Wellness Wednesday. This is G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. If you have questions, the number is 516-387-1944, and we will be right back.
Swiffer Sweeper cleans so completely, you'll never go back to your old broom again.
Now a song for Mary from a Mr. Broom.
New Swiffer Sweepers redesigned to clean corners, and it traps and locks 50% more dirt, dust, and hair than a broom. So go all the way clean. New Swiffer. Clean better or your money back. Guaranteed.
This is Douglas Dobbs of Dobbs Cremation and Funeral Service. We have served the Central Florida community for 29 years with quality funeral and cremation services. Honoring all religions and faiths, we have been here for many grieving families. Whether it's a complete funeral service with a burial or a simple, dignified cremation, Dobbs Cremation and Funeral Service is here for you. Located at 430 North Kirkman Road at the 408 Expressway, Dobbs Cremation and Funeral Service, 407-578-7720. Dobbs. Dedicated to serving our families.
Good afternoon. Welcome back to G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. I am your host, G. Thanks so much for being with us today. By the way, just a reminder, we are in election season right now. If you are, you know, have a primary that you need to vote on, we are in early voting right now, and the election is Tuesday. Less than a week away. So please get on that. If you have a mail-in ballot, please either mail it in or drop it off downtown at the Supervisor of Elections office on Cayley. But just please, and I'm talking to Orange County, but it, you know, whatever county you're in, Seminole County, Osceola Lake, please, you know, make sure that you vote, and make sure that you study up on the people and issues before you go vote. I just want to throw that out there. Anyway, we are back on this Wellness Wednesday with Dr. Sarah Saint-Louis. And one of the things I want to ask you about that I don't know that much about, but apparently it's an issue we need to be aware of and address and just kind of look out for, are what they call pelvic floor disorders. So please give us some insight on that.
Absolutely. I'd be happy to. And this is what I focus my work on at this point. But pelvic floor disorders can be summed up into a couple different things. Two of the most common being incontinence and prolapse. And what those things are leakage, which is leakage of urine or stool at times when you don't want to release any urine or stool. That's what incontinence is. And most commonly that happens when we're laughing very hard, coughing, sneezing, exercising, running, even simply bending over to pick something up, that can happen. And then there can also be problems with the bowel as well, where we have so much urgency that we can't get to the toilet in time. And those are issues of the pelvic floor. Other dysfunction includes prolapse, which is basically considered a hernia of your pelvic organs. And there's only, as we know at the pelvic floor, there's a few different openings. And so when we have a hernia of our organs in the pelvis, they can herniate through the vagina and quite possibly through the rectum. And I know that sounds drastic, but that is what happens. So we can have what's called a bladder prolapse, where the bladder is dropped and herniating through the vagina, or we can have a uterine prolapse, where the uterus is dropped, or we can have a rectocele, which is the rectum prolapse or herniating through the vagina. And these are all pelvic floor disorders. And then quite briefly, another pelvic floor disorder, which is equally as important, is pelvic pain, vaginal pain, chronic pain from muscle spasms within the pelvic floor, which can create uncomfortable intercourse and pain with intercourse, or it can even prevent you from emptying your bladder or your bowels efficiently.
So is this a natural occurrence with aging, or are there other things, other medical conditions that contribute to this happening? And when is there a time in life when this usually occurs?
Absolutely. It's a great question. So the most common reasons for these conditions to occur, in particular the incontinence and the prolapse, is due to childbirth. So just the fact that we carry a child and the fact that we pass a child through our pelvic floor, which is actually somewhat of a traumatic experience for your pelvic floor, that's a huge risk factor. And the more deliveries we have, the more at risk you are for developing pelvic floor dysfunction. Other causes for these things to happen is aging. So yes, it also is a process of aging. And the reason why is because when we have incontinence, sometimes it can be due to a weakness in the pelvic floor tissues and muscles, and that's why we can't hold the urine in our bladder or hold the stool within the rectum and anus area. And as we age, we all know, because we see it in other areas of our body, when we lose our estrogen, we lose our collagen. And that's what a lot of the beauty products that we use have as part of it. But we're not just losing collagen in our face or under our arm. We're losing collagen everywhere, and we're losing the strength in the muscle strength all over the entire body. So it also happens in the pelvic floor. So when we lose estrogen, we lose collagen, we lose muscle strength, and therefore women oftentimes start to see prolapse occur around the time of menopause or a few years after, or they start to leak more than they were leaking before simply because of the loss of estrogen. Other risk factors are genetics. A lot of times this runs in families. Also, history of smoking, because we know that has an effect on our tissue and on the quality of our tissue across the entire body. And other risk factors for pelvic floor dysfunction are increased weight, and obesity, because that adds pressure and stress to the pelvic floor, and also conditions that continue to put pressure and stress on the pelvic floor, such as chronic constipation. Lifelong constipation can contribute to pelvic floor dysfunction as well.
So if you find that some of this stuff is starting to happen, and let's say you diagnose and you catch it early, can you do stuff like exercises to strengthen those muscles that or the area so that you won't have to do anything on a drastic nature unless it's something specifically wrong. I was just curious.
Absolutely. And in particular, a great way to start out is by seeing a urogynecologist, which is what I do. And a urogynecologist is a gynecologist with special training in the pelvic floor. We always like to start with our conservative therapies first, and that's the number one thing that we recommend is pelvic floor physical therapy. A lot of people don't know it exists, but there is actually a very specific and specialized form of physical therapy that is meant for your pelvic floor. And we've all heard Kegels, 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 Kegels. But the truth is up to a third of women are not doing Kegels correctly. So It's very important, to have this evaluated by someone. And oftentimes your gynecologist will refer you to a urogynecologist for this type of examination. And pelvic floor physical therapists are just extremely instrumental, and they can basically teach you how to rehabilitate your pelvic floor, how to strengthen it, how to protect it against further damage, and how to control things like leakage or incontinence. And they can help women that have symptoms of prolapse. They can't actually make the prolapse, disappear, but they can most certainly help with the symptoms of prolapse. So that was a great question. And I just want all women to know, because I hear it all the time, I've been doing Kegels for 20 years. Sometimes we just need a little extra help.
Yeah. Because I know I try it, and
yeah.
I'm like, I don't think I'm doing this right. But anyway.
Yeah.
So I guess next time I go to the gynecologist, maybe I'll get better instruction or whatever, make sure I'm doing it right. Because, as you age, that's definitely something, there's so much stuff going on with your body as you're aging. That's just one of the things
that
if you don't really have to deal with, if you can, do some sort of preventative maintenance, hey, I'm on board with that. So.
Absolutely. We also have research does show that Pilates is an incredible exercise program for pelvic floor. So
really?
We have studies that back that show decreased leakage, decreased symptoms of prolapse when following a Pilates program. So I recommend that as well.
I will have to look into that because I have not done that. I do Zumba, and I was doing other stuff before when I was going to the gym, swimming and some other things. But being that I'm not at the gym anymore right now, just having to change my routine. So maybe that'll be something to incorporate. So what other? I guess I'm assuming. A lot of this, when it gets to an advanced stage, has to, in terms of being corrected, has to have surgery. Is that the case? And does that work for a long-term solution?
So that's another great question. We have a couple other things along the way. We do have something called a pessary, which is basically a brace. That's a device that can be used whenever you desire. It doesn't have to be worn all the time. It's very similar to if you have a knee problem, maybe a ligament tear, and when you go out to exercise, you put a brace on because it makes your knee more comfortable and more stable. So we also have devices called pessaries that we can fit patients with that can help with both their leakage and their prolapse. Another one that's over-the-counter that came out a few years ago, we all are pretty much aware of the Poise brand, and they've made a bladder support that goes in like a tampon, and it actually helps support the tissue beneath the urethra to stop leaking from happening when you cough, sneeze, laugh, or go to your exercise class. That is a great over-the-counter temporary way to get through your activities in your day without worrying about leakage. And again, we can also fit for a pessary, which is a brace that basically holds the vagina up in place so that you're not having your bladder drop or your uterus drop. And those are just simply these flexible, soft silicone devices that fit within the vagina and can be taken out and replaced by the patient whenever they so choose to wear them. And then after that, after trying physical therapy or trying any of those devices, then there is surgical correction and surgical repair. And we have some things that are very minimally invasive, and we have other things that are a little bit more your standard surgery that are going to require 6 to 8 weeks of recovery. And with any of our surgical procedures and corrections, there's not 100% guarantee that it will fix it. And also, we have seen that over time, that for various women, it will return. And the way that I like to explain that is, again, we're talking about collagen, we're talking about our own tissue and the strength of it, and we're talking about that we do continue to age. So no matter what we do to correct it at age 60, we're going to continue to age up till 80. And we quite often see this when we have other reconstructive surgeries. So, for instance, a woman that has a breast augmentation or a breast lift, it doesn't matter. Over time, her body is still going to continue to age, and we do see women that will go back for a nip and a tuck here and there, maybe 10 years, 15 years down the line. And oftentimes with prolapse, we can see that same sort of thing. There's one thing we haven't figured out how to do yet with these procedures and this therapy is we can't defy gravity and you can't really defy age. We haven't figured those two things out yet in medicine. So that's the short answer to your question. But a lot of our procedures do have some pretty good success rates, and we only operate if it's affecting the woman's quality of life. That's another thing that's important to point out. I may see a bladder drop on exam, but if it's not bothering you, I'm not going to bother it. So it's not a necessary thing. It really has to do with how comfortable that woman is and how it's affecting her.
We are here with Dr. Sarah San Luis. This is G's Power Hour. It's Wellness Wednesday. If you have questions, we got a little bit of time after the break. The number is 516-387-1944. When we come back, yeah, we're talking about that nasty pandemic, a little bit about it. This is G's Power Hour. I never had so good entertainment. We'll be right back.
This is Douglas Dobbs, owner and funeral director at Dobbs Cremation and Funeral Service. We have served the Central Florida community with two generations of family funeral service. With the recent addition of my son Brandon, we are here to take care of the needs of Central and West Orlando. From simple cremation to a full burial, Dobbs Cremation and Funeral Service is here to help you. Located at 430 North Kirkman Road at the 408 Expressway, Dobbs Cremation and Funeral Service, 407-578-7720. Dobbs, dedicated to serving our families.
Having a wedding, reception, family reunion, planning a banquet, or some other fundraising event. Need to share your knowledge through a workshop or seminar. Or it's a difficult time and you need to plan a wake or repast. Let us help. At our gatherings, let us reduce the stress and make the occasion memorable, treasured. Call our gatherings at 407-968-9387 or email ourgatherings@yahoo.com. Let us help plan your special event.
Good afternoon and welcome back to G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. I am your host, G. Thanks so much for being with us. Tomorrow, we have some ladies that are going to be with us, and we're going to talk about the selection. Kamala Harris as the next candidate for doing the ticket for a VP for the Democratic Party. But in the meantime, we are here with Dr. Sarah San Luis, who is joining us to talk about a variety of medical issues this Wellness Wednesday, including how is the pandemic complicating things like pregnancy and childbirth and some of the issues that we've discussed on the show?
That's a big question. Well, I can respond to what I know of in our community in the Central Florida area. I have not practiced obstetrics for a few years, actually several years, since 2013. But what's happening in the area is, number one, we initially had issues with pregnant women coming in that are asymptomatic and positive for COVID, and there have been issues with where to put positive COVID patients. There have been issues with labor and the fact that it's obviously a very exhaustive process. So women are pushing and going through extreme exertion for a few hours at a time. So there have been issues with protecting the healthcare providers that are present for the labor and delivery. We've had issues with the fetal, with the newborn, born to a COVID positive mother. Do they assume infant is positive, which we have found out there's very low risk of vertical transmission. But we've had to make a lot of decisions as to how we take care of those babies. Where do they go in the nursery or the NICU? Testing of the newborns, newborn care after delivery, whether the mom is in the same room as the infant and certain precautions. And we've really had to work our way through that over the past several months. And every week there's, you know, new recommendations. And I'm sure every month each hospital and labor and delivery across the country is modifying things. And then there's also the COVID pandemic's effect on prenatal care. So we're seeing a lot of offices spread their visits out for their moms, unless there's something obviously really important that needs to be attended to, but they're spacing out those routine obstetric visits. We're also seeing issues where most times women like to come with a support partner for their visits or for ultrasounds, and they've no longer been able to offer that in many offices and facilities. So there's a slew and an array of things that are complicating obstetric care, and that's a big question. But I've taken part on some panel discussing it and learning about it through some of our hospital systems and our local offices here. And the good news is that things definitely continue to improve as far as support for the pregnant mom. For instance, initially they were not allowed to have a supportive person during labor and delivery in the beginning of the pandemic. And now most hospitals are allowing one supportive person. But that hopefully touches on that question, which is a lot of material.
Yeah, it's I can't imagine being in that position right now. Just in general, dealing with childbirth and dealing with infant care and all of that, the stress of that alone is bad. Then you top it with the COVID. We got to just keep these people in prayer. We got to keep everybody in prayer. But I did want to ask you something else. I want to go back to what we were talking about earlier and kind of touch on, I guess, everything that we've talked about. We've talked about so much. But I wanted to talk about stress and its role in terms of menstrual and pelvic issues. Is it a contributing factor, I guess, and how much so? And if you manage to reduce some of the stress with that, do things like decrease some of the symptoms, such as the pain during the menstrual cycles and other things, the pressure on the bladder, other things?
That is a great question, and unfortunately, I will have to be running shortly.
Okay.
To see patients.
All right.
But, I would say we do know that stress plays a critical role in the body in its hormonal response, and that increased levels of stress can increase many medical conditions, as well as many chronic medical conditions that can have an effect on fertility, and of course can have an effect on our perception and our understanding of pain. And then as far as the pelvic floor goes, a lot of times, I think it's a little confusing because a lot of times when I say stress to the pelvic floor, I'm actually talking about a physical stress, a physical pressure to the pelvic floor. So, for instance, we call the leakage when we cough, sneeze, laugh, or exercise stress incontinence. And it's not because we are emotionally stressed out. It's more so we are putting a physical stress on the bladder. When we cough or laugh or exercise, we're putting a pressure or a force on the bladder that causes the leakage to happen. But stress in general as a physiological response can contribute to pelvic floor disorders, can contribute to things such as incoordination of pelvic floor muscles, which can contribute to the inability to empty your bladder or empty your bowel, and can greatly contribute to pain with intercourse. So yes, you are correct. Stress plays a critical role in a lot of medical conditions.
Dr. Sarah, thank you so very much. Appreciate your time and let you get on with your day and helping the many other people that depend on you, and just a lot of great information you gave today. Really appreciate it. Thanks.
Thank you so very much for having me again.
And I got your link, so I posted it. So I appreciate that. Thank you.
Okay, perfect. All right. Take care.
Have a blessed day. You too.
Bye-bye. You too.
And like I said, you all join us tomorrow. We're going to talk about the selection of Kamala Harris as the vice presidential running mate for the Democrats. And we'll have with us on one of my great friends, Professor Dr. Ava Greenwell. She'll be on, and also returning to is Nadine Brown, immigration attorney Nadine Brown, and possibly some others. So it'll be an interesting conversation. Please join us tomorrow. In the meantime, be well, be safe, stay out of these crazy thunder and lightning storms if you're in Central Florida. Have a very blessed day. This has been G's Power Hour. I never had it so good entertainment. And please remember, all real power comes from God. Take care.
Come on, you gotta say something.